From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm producer Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made on February 7th, when nearly 112 million people turn into Super Bowl 50. Like most years, there was buzz about the commercials. With a price tag of $5 million for 30 seconds of airtime, expectations were pretty high. 52 brands purchased spots, hoping to cash in on the massive live audience. So if you were watching, you saw everything from dachshunds wearing hot dog buns running toward people dressed as Heinz ketchup bottles to Sir Anthony Hopkins, quote, not selling himself out while petting his dog named TurboTax.com. And then you may have seen a bizarre new animal called a puppy monkey baby. So almost a month after the game, we ask, which ads delivered? Which do you remember? Which stood out to you? What do you and viewers across the country remember? And do those takeaways fall in line with the return on investment for the brands? We'll spend the hour answering these questions, and we'll talk about how the advertising industry continues to evolve thanks to digital and social media. I have a powerhouse of a panel in the studio today. I'm very excited about this hour. Mark Stone is managing partner and chief creative officer at Dixon Schwabel. Mark, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Tina Clark is the manager of digital and social media strategy at Roberts Communication. Hi, Trina.
Tina, hi. Tina? Great to be here.
Hi.
Thank you.
Kent Joshvi is the co-owner and creative director for Antithesis Advertising. Thanks for coming in, Kent.
Thanks for having us, Megan. It's my pleasure.
And joining us on the phone is Kevin O'Neill, professor of advertising at Syracuse University's S.I. Newhouse School of Public Communications. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Megan. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I want to start with the biggest question of the day. What were your favorite ads? I'd like to go around the table. What was the biggest winner to you? We'll start with Mark.
I really liked the Jeep ad where they had the black and white portraits of everyone, and it ultimately led into kind of the you make Jeep, we don't make Jeep, and celebrating the 75th anniversary. I thought there was some stopping power to that in the middle of all the kind of other over-the-top ads that were happening.
Let's stop and talk about that one for a second, because that one won an award, I believe, the Super Clio Prize, I think it's called.
Yes.
Honoring the best ad to run during the game. So as you said, it featured those black and white portraits of faces both famous and everyday. So we saw Marilyn Monroe, B.B. King, Jeff Goldblum, Steve McQueen. And I remember reading that that ad in particular didn't use any tricks. As you said, you didn't see these cars driving, you know, across rocky terrain. It was the storytelling, I thought, that was really interesting about
it. You know, Megan, I was very impressed with that ad, too, for all sorts of reasons. But I think I always love it when you see a brand achieve a kind of, when they get their hands on a kind of lofty cultural currency, you know, which I think Chrysler did a couple of years ago with Eastwood. And I agree with my colleague there. I thought the Jeep portraits piece was really a lovely idea.
Let's listen to that. Let's listen to that ad from Jeep.
I've seen things no man should bear, and those that every man should dare. From the beaches of Normandy to the far reaches of the earth. In my life, I have lived millions of lives. I've outrun robots and danced with dinosaurs. I've faced the faces of fear and fortitude and witnessed great beauty in the making. I've kept the company of kings and queens, but I'm no royalty or saint. I've traveled, trekked, wandered, and roamed, only to find myself right where I belong.
And the tagline of that clip again is, we don't make Jeep, you do.
You know, it's a powerful idea when you don't really need to see it, and you can feel the copywriting was really, really strong in that, and they didn't have to have a giant production budget with it just because the message was very, very simple and concise.
One of the things about that ad, especially that carries over to what works really well on social media, is that emotion and, you know, not necessarily leading with your brand message. Especially just listening to it, you don't even know it's a Jeep ad, but it evokes that emotion. That kind of content does really well in advertising and online and social media.
You see more and more brands doing that now where they're trying to create an emotional relationship with their clients and get them to say, they understand me. We're seeing that a lot. I just looked at a spot this morning. I think it ran in the Super Bowl last year, and it was for Dodge for their 100th anniversary, and it was spectacular. It was great.
Pulling
with all the with all the old folks.
Yes, 100. Yeah, yes. It was their 100 year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a terrific spot. My favorite spot of the Super Bowl, as I was alluding to earlier, was the Audi commercial called Commander. And if you haven't seen that, I don't know if you have that to cue it up. But
no, unfortunately, we don't.
It was terrific. Again, storytelling is about this. This guy comes home and his father's living with him, and he's a senior adult. He's depressed. He's despondent. And they can't figure out how to get him to eat. And then they take him out for a ride in this new, whatever it is, 12-cylinder, 8-cylinder Audi, which is incredible. It's like a rocket ship. And he pictures himself as an astronaut. He's got the helmet on and everything, and you see the vapor from his breath on the screen, on the glass of the, it's just incredible. It really, it was done well. And that's the thing about doing a terrific commercial, is the story is everything, the execution is everything else, and they left nothing left to do.
Mm-hmm. Other end of the spectrum, super high budget for that one, but I love that one,
yeah,
too. Now that, so there you go, two for two on cars here.
Well, I'm going to take a different route, and I'm going to say, you know, especially sort of in the vein of the emotion, but the one I loved was Avocados from Mexico.
Oh.
I thought it was hilarious. I loved the way they interjected the cube of Rubik, and they, and with Scott Baio, which started a meme, and, you know, they really kind of hit on all the pop culture stuff while making everybody laugh, and I really enjoyed that one.
So entertainment, pulling at the heartstrings, there's some PSAs in there. We'll talk about that in a moment. But Kevin, what was the biggest winner to you?
Well, as I said, I loved the emotional ambition of Jeep. I thought the portrait spot was terrific. I loved the epic silliness of Heinz. But the thing that stood out to me, there's a phenomenon that I refer to as random acts of creativity, which you see a lot of in advertising, and particularly you see a lot of it in the Super Bowl, which is advertising that may be clever or funny, but has no connection to the brand or a benefit. And I was really impressed with the Hyundai. They had a sort of clutch of spots. They had the first date spot. They had
Ryan.
They had Ryan. Mm-hmm. They had the bear chase. I mean, they had several spots which were both entertaining and absolutely connected to a reason to buy the car, mm-hmm, which kind of impressed me. When you think about the so-called legendary Force Be With You spot for VW, mm-hmm, from some years ago, I mean, a very popular spot, but it gave you no reason to buy the automobile, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm always impressed when someone is able to graft a terrific creative idea onto an actual benefit. Mm-hmm. Or feature of the car, which I think Hyundai did sort of uniformly.
In the old days, we used to refer to that as borrowed interest. Like,
yes,
what does it,
yeah,
have to do with the spots? Mm-hmm. Entertainment for entertainment's sake, which you see probably a lot more of in the Super Bowl, where people are just vying for attention. Whereas I think there's an interesting phenomenon with Super Bowl spots, and that is clients not only expect great creative, they demand it. And because they're on this stage and everybody's looking at them and evaluating, yet the rest of the year, clients want to ask to have rational benefits put in their messaging and less entertainment value. Mm-hmm. And I never understood that.
So I just want to ask this question. What's the deal with this puppy monkey baby? And a comment just came in on Twitter. It says, this is Jake, he says, puppy monkey baby seemed like a botched attempt to go viral with a younger crowd. Felt stupid to me. What are your guest thoughts?
It did actually was one of the very few official hashtags that trended throughout the Super Bowl. That's not necessarily good or bad, because it was one of those ads, as Kurt was saying, that just didn't really connect to the product. You could know all about Puppy Monkey Baby, but you don't know what the product was, mm-hmm, you know. So it definitely had an entertainment value, but it probably also got a lot of negative Twitter chatter, too.
That's one of those tenuous ties back, you know, there a puppy and a monkey and a baby, three things that you love, tenuously tied back to three things of the product, which I don't even remember,
right.
Juice, caffeine, and more Mountain Dew, which has caffeine
remember.
In it. Putting myself in the shoes of their target, which is probably an 18 or 20-year-old guy playing video games with a lot of testosterone, maybe it connected, but it had a bit of shock value where the room stopped. And we reviewed that at Dixon Schwabel at the agency the next morning, and it got a lot of laughs for sure. I don't know that anybody would be running out to go buy it.
Well, it's funny, you know, because I was born, you know, before 1990, I'm willing to concede. I'm in no position to comment on that piece of advertising. But I do, speaking for the parents of America, I do think it's impossible for a parent to watch that commercial and not be offended. I mean, it's so grotesque, you know, and the idea of a deformed child is so heartbreaking to you. I mean, I simply couldn't watch it, you know.
What I like to do when I see a spot like that is just try to imagine the presentation when the agency attempted to sell that spot to
the
client.
What I want to know. How did that pitch go? Please, someone tell me. How do you pitch
I'm
that?
I'm guessing they had the music ready, because that was the best part of it. The music at the end was really catchy.
And who goes out on a limb and says, yeah, that's what we're going to run?
Yeah.
Well, that was done by BBDO, and they're traditionally known for being really, really good creative. BBDO New York and their chief creative officer, David Lubbers. They also do Snickers, they also do Skittles, and so probably had a pretty young creative team and a superstar creative director that could sell anything to anybody, most likely, to get that through.
Mm-hmm. There were a couple ads, too, that were straight-up PSAs. There was the Colgate ad, don't brush with the faucet running. And what was it? Up to four gallons of water can be wasted. That's more water than some people have in a week. That was their message. And then there was the Budweiser ad with Helen Mirren about DWI. And let's listen to that.
Oh, my beer, lovely. Hello, I'm Helen Mirren. A notoriously frank and uncensored British lady. The collective, we are dumbfounded that people still drive drunk. So I'll sum it up like this. If you drive drunk, you, simply put, are a short-sighted, utterly useless, oxygen-wasting human form of pollution, a Darwin Award-deserving, selfish coward. If your brain was donated to science, science would return it. So stop it. Now, the chances are you're a fun, solid, respectable human being. Don't be a pillock. Your friends and family thank you. The friends and family of other drivers thank you. Your future self thanks you. This is supposed to be fun. Cheers. Nice and cold.
I mean, you've got to love, you know, having some boorish... boorish American beer drinkers who consume too much before they drive, being dressed down by a British grand dame. I mean,
I just like the word pillock. I'll listen
yes,
to that.
Yes.
I bet you that was a Google trend, right?
I did see some defensive reaction on, you know, social media and that, you know, calling Budweiser a little bit hypocritical when they'll sell you the beer. But then they want to tell, you know, I mean, in reality, I think it makes sense for that message to be coming from anybody. but it was interesting. And then just in terms of looking at the social media, the Budweiser ad after the Super Bowl had about 5 million hits before 3 to 4 million. But the Puppy Monkey Baby went from about 6 to 9 million views beforehand up to 22 million. So definitely in terms of the social media pickup, unfortunately, the silliness caught on and the responsible message didn't quite catch on quite as much.
It struck me as an odd execution for a message like that. I mean, they could have gone so many ways. They could have gone with the scare tactic or some other way to drive that home. But to have your mother tell you, you better not drink and drive was an interesting approach.
It was actually, I was interested by what I'll describe as the British invasion in the Super Bowl. Mm. You know, where you had Mirren, you had Andrew Hopkins, and though Liam Neeson's an Irishman, it's still sort of a UK thing. And of course, Americans often turn to the Brits when they simply want to elevate the proceedings a little bit, you know, to get
a little more formality.
A British accent in there.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the 2016 Super Bowl ads. Now it's almost a month after they've aired, and we're digging into which were winners, which were losers, and which were just strange. And we're talking about how advertising is changing. You can join the conversation by calling 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, you can call 263-WXXI. That's 263-9994. I'm also on Twitter at MMacMedia, or you can email the program at connections@WXXI.org. We want to hear from you. We want to know what you remember, what stood out to you, so feel free to give us a call. Here's another big question. Is a Super Bowl ad still really worth the price tag? So this year, $5 million for 30 seconds. Should we still be paying this amount for 30 seconds of airtime?
I would say it depends on what your objective is. If you're trying to build awareness and make a mark for yourself, I'd say it is. And part of me says rationally that it's not worth it. It's a big price tag. But when you think about all the attention and all the buzz that's created from a spot, look, it's a month later, we're still talking about it. You got to believe that some of these advertisers have definitely gotten their money's worth.
Yeah, most people are going into it not with just a 30-second or a minute commercial. They've got a large kind of approach around it and a big strategy around it, and whether that's releasing the spot earlier, teasing the spot earlier through social media, to giving the viewers a chance to even get some enhanced content, maybe decide the ending of a spot or decide which spot's going to win, or possibly have a chance to win something themselves by retweeting something or using a specific hashtag. Not to mention the spot, well, obviously it's launched during the Super Bowl, but you see it now. If you watch TV, you watch any sports now, you see a lot of those spots continuing to run a lot. So it's just kind of the beginning. So with that kind of angle, I think that it gets a lot more shelf life from it.
Yeah, and they get the value, obviously, of the television, the eyeballs, but they also get a lot of value out of what they put out on social media. And, you know, you can see, you know, when we looked at YouTube views and Facebook native video views, a lot of the brands smartly put their videos on both, millions of views between them, so they're definitely getting traction that way. But also, when you look at the repeat, the ones who were first time the year before and then repeated, like Wix.com and Squarespace, they obviously found value in you know, the Super Bowl ad from 2015 and did it again in 2016.
You know, another thing that's important to remember is that a lot of brands aren't simply trying to reach consumers. And that's why the automotive category, for example, is so large on the Super Bowl, because you've got hundreds or thousands of franchisees and dealers. You've got the thousands of people who work in the factories. I mean, there's a Super Bowl spot, I mean, executed successfully, you know, can make an enormous emotional morale contribution to a brand. So it's not just about attracting customers. It's about the brand standing in its industry.
That's a very good point. My agency had the pleasure of working on spots for You Are Medicine in the past, and you know, those were aimed at customers, but stakeholders are a huge audience as well, and
yeah,
what it's done for morale internally and giving everybody sort of rallying around a sort of a message and a direction, it's been very helpful in that.
I remember watching those last year, and it just made me stop in my tracks, because you see chaos, crazy ads, weird, you know, ideas, and then you see something beautiful like those URMC ads that they just slowed everything down, and it really touched your heart. So I think those stood out. I mean, in the sea of ads, there's another question. How do you make yourself stand out when you know that you have the biggest competition on the stage at that point? What are some tips or trends that are effective, do you think?
Well, thanks for the compliment. Mm-hmm. And I think my favorite Super Bowl spot of all time, or recent history that I can remember, was for FedEx. And what was so brilliant about it was that it stood out. And it opened on static. And then an announcer came on after like 15 seconds and said, had this sponsor shipped the commercial to the network using FedEx, it would have arrived on time. So we apologize. Think of that. It cost them no money. It was just a brilliant idea that stood out because of its starkness, its emptiness. Mm-hmm. So it was anti-production.
It feels like everybody's going over the top so much, whether it's, you know, you always joke, it's you got an animal or a baby, and then make them talk, and then make them sing, and then, you know, and you saw a lot of that this
Panda
Super Bowl.
Bear.
Or in the past, they've thrown in a lot of sophomoric humor. Bud Light's always known for that, you know, just to get that joke in there, and twisted into a punchline that you don't quite expect. And it's pretty, that could be funny the first time you see it, you know, and you're in a social situation, a room full of people, you look at what makes them stop, and often the things that make a more emotional connection, like you're referring to with the UR spots, it doesn't have to have a huge production budget in that way. It has to have a very smart, simple, strong idea executed in a way that makes people think about it in a particular angle or connect with them emotionally.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things I think I notice most about the Super Bowl spots is sometimes in lieu of a great idea, people rely on huge executions, you know, car crashes and famous stars when I don't know how long that, I don't know how well that resonates with their audience and how long people retain that. But if there's an idea that's tied back to the brand that makes sense, I think it will come across more honest and truer to the brand.
One of the things that often produces a terrific Super Bowl spot is when a few things sort of collide. I mean, obviously, at the heart of most of the great ones, there's simply a terrific story. You know, whether it's a lost puppy, or whether, as in last year's Super Bowl, that terrific spot I thought for Coca-Cola, where the Coca-Cola gets spilled.
Mm-hmm.
And if you all remember that.
The spread Coca-Cola happiness.
Remind our listeners, Kevin, if you can, what the storyline of that was.
The storyline was beautifully simple. There's a technician in the basement of what appears to be a big data center. And he puts his Coca-Cola down on top of a rack of machines. And it falls over. And the sweet elixir, Coca-Cola, seeps into the grid. And through a series of quick cuts, you learn that it's infected, in quotes, the entire internet, okay? And all the violence and viciousness and bullying and hatred that exists on the internet is transformed into sweetness and light. Okay, so you, one, had a great story. Two, you had a story that made all the sense in the world for that brand. And three, it grafted itself onto a kind of social, cultural moment, which is about the internet and how rugged and harsh it can be. I thought that was just a terrific bringing together of the several elements that often produce a great spot.
Tina, you wanted to weigh in?
Well, first I'll just say I really wish that were real. We need some of that right now. But I was going to say, you know, one of the elements of, you know, a really great piece. I read an article that was like, well, you need a puppy. And Budweiser, you know, had a beautiful commercial last year and a few years with the puppies and the Clydesdales. And they were very emotional and touching and humorous even so. But it's definitely not just as easy to say you need a puppy because GoDaddy, of course, famously did the kidnap a puppy kind of commercial that just did not play well with people. So you can mess things up. Same thing with the Nationwide commercial. You know, the idea being something very emotional, but they went too far. That was a commercial with a little boy
last
talking
year.
At the end. You find out that he actually had died, and it was horrific.
Oh,
everybody
geez.
Hated that commercial, you know. So
that was such a strong Twitter response in a not a great way for that brand.
Yeah.
That I think that they were going into damage control after that thing ran. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
In your opinion, does it make more sense to spend that $5 million on multiple spots in primetime? And a highly rated primetime show, or is it better to spend the $5 million on one 30-second ad during the Super Bowl?
I think during the Super Bowl, you know for sure people are going to watch the ads. That's what it's all about, though I do think it's shifting because of so much of it going out on social media. But, you know, mostly every other show, people DVR'd and they're fast-forwarding, and so at least you know you can guarantee you're going to get those eyeballs.
The Super Bowl is the last place that exists that we all look at it together, maybe a little bit with the Oscars or the Grammys, but that we all watch together, often in a very social situation, and so you can have your reaction all together. And even if you've seen it before, you're waiting for it, and you're waiting to see if it comes through and if you're going to respond the same way, and everybody talks about it together, and so it makes quite an impact compared to being, you know, in prime time, where I agree you could just fly right through it, or you're not watching the spot as much as you're watching the show, which is for sure during the game.
I think the question you're asking, though, is what do you value more, frequency or impact? And I don't have the answer to that. I think, again, it depends on what your strategy is and what you're trying to say about your brand, whether you're trying to introduce it for the first time or whether it's a maintenance campaign. But there's a lot to take into account. But I think you have people on both sides, both camps that, you know, and I think that's evident by the sponsors that you see during Super Bowl spots versus the rest of the year. But I think there are other events, like big sporting events, U.S. Open or soccer or football in general, where clients have gotten great response and great viewership.
Do you think
a lot of people, I mean, as usual, the answer to your question, you know, depends on how compelling your piece of communication is. Okay, a great example is a couple of Super Bowls ago when Oreo kind of hijacked the Super Bowl with the blackout and you can dunk in the dark.
Yeah, that was great.
Now, Oreo, of course, could have planned to buy a $4 million commercial and done their best to make it compelling and interesting. But, I mean, it's all about the quality of the communication, whether you're on the Super Bowl or you're sort of attempting to hijack it with some brilliant posting on social media while the game's going on.
One of the interesting things I saw was a lot of brands, not just the ones featured in the Super Bowl, but especially them, they actually were playing off each other's spots and tweeting about the other spots and
sure,
things.
Yeah.
So they were gaining even more, you know, visibility through those methods. Mm-hmm.
I guess today one of the questions to ask is whether you even need to be on broadcast television.
Right, absolutely.
I worked with a brilliant writer, Jason Carley, when we were at Saatchi & Saatchi, and he came up with a Bud Light commercial called Swear Jar that's gotten over 3.5 million hits, never aired. It's great, and just through word of mouth, people have discovered it.
Mm-hmm. Where the phones are starting to light up, I think the next question coming in is about the Oscars. So before we take that call, I just want to point out that the average cost of a spot at the Oscars this year was $2 million for a 30-second spot, so $3 million less than a Super Bowl ad. And that was an all-time record and a double-digit bump since last year. But viewership of the Oscars was down. It's an 8-year low of just more than 34 million viewers. So there's some background information. And next we have Christy from Fairport with a question about the Oscars. Hi, Christy.
Hi there.
Hi.
So I saw a series of ads during the Academy Awards that I thought stuck with me and my family far more than anything that we saw during the Super Bowl. And I just thought, I think it was from United Healthcare. They did a series of like really random accidents that brought people into the healthcare system. And we just laughed so hard because they were all so unexpected and just hilarious, and we had to go and look them all up on YouTube again because they were fantastic. And I don't know if it's that maybe I'm the right target audience for the Oscars and maybe not so much for the Super Bowl, but it just tickled me and my family just to see these ads. I don't know if you guys know which ones I'm talking about. But
I thought those were pretty good. They were sort of interesting and surprising. The problem I have with them in general is I could not have told you whose advertising it was.
Exactly my issue, right.
I thought the idea for the advertising was very good. These kind of random, interesting ways in which people find themselves thrust into a health moment when they need some help. But I couldn't have told you for the life of me whose advertising it was.
And I watched the Super Bowl, or I watched the Oscars, but I don't recall one single ad. I think every commercial I jumped up and did something else. I wasn't paying close attention to the ads.
The expectations weren't as high for the commercials, so you don't feel like you have to stay glued.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I think that's something that we see a lot of times. We remember the execution, but not who the commercial was for.
Right.
And, of course, the Oscars remains one of the great mysteries of the universe. Which is how a show about the most accomplished entertainers on Earth can't make itself more entertaining.
I mean, it's a good point.
It's an enduring mystery.
There's an email that came in from Michael. He says, I don't understand this national obsession with football. It's like it's becoming our national religion. I can't stand watching commercials, which is why I cut the cable. The 1% must be loving it, how people look forward to seeing the Super Bowl commercials. Some people actually watch it for the commercials. They really have dumbed down the American people. So there's an extreme viewpoint. There are a lot of people that watch just for the commercials, but I think some people see it as it's fun. It's like it's an event in itself. The ads are the event.
I think for the same reason you go to the movies. You know, you want to see creativity. You want to see how they're going to tell a story. I mean, for me, I approach it from a, you know, a marketing standpoint, but in terms of what is the creativity, what is the storytelling, you know, I think they're just like a comedy will never win an Oscar. I think it's, you underestimate how difficult it is to make these commercials, and I think it's interesting to watch.
And even
I'd love my colleague's opinion on this. I've always been skeptical of the claim by the networks that everyone is poised, desperate to see the advertising in the Super Bowl, which I suspect to some degree is a sales pitch they have to make when they're charging $5 million. You got to convince every advertiser that people are desperate to see them. But in my experience, when I was in the industry before I started teaching, I mean, when I'm at a Super Bowl gathering with other people from the ad business, of course we watch the ads. When I'm at a Super Bowl party with civilians, okay, I mean, you can't hear the advertising because everybody's chatting and, I mean, et cetera, et cetera. I wonder what your experience has been.
I think it's a little bit, I tend to agree with you. I see Super Bowl spots sometimes like I see Saturday Night Live skits where they're a lot less interesting to watch than they are to talk about the next day at the water cooler.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think it's that buzz that's generated even, you know, Now times, people don't have to actually watch it. They'll see it online.
I think maybe I've never been to a Super Bowl gathering without people in the ad industry. The minute that the commercials come on, everybody be like, we got to be quiet. Check this out.
We're late for a break, but we'll come back and talk more about the digital and social media realms and where to watch these ads. We'll take more of your phone calls, too, so feel free to call us at 844-295-TALK, and we'll be right back after this short break.
I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, first hour, we talk about transportation in Rochester as the Reshaping Rochester series continues. We're looking at other cities that have reshaped their own transportation systems. Then second hour, Mark Morial joins us, president of the Urban League of America. He talks about the presidential contenders, and we'll talk to students. We're putting together an event for black students at the University of Rochester and around the country. Talk with you Thursday.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm producer Megan Mack, filling in for Evan Dawson today. And he's missing out because we are having a great conversation about Super Bowl ads and advertising. My guests for the hour are Mark Stone, Managing Partner and Chief Creative Officer at Dixon Schwabel, Tina Clark, Manager of Digital and Social Media Strategy at Roberts Communications, Kent Joshby is the owner and creative director for Antithesis Advertising. And joining us on the phone is Kevin O'Neill, professor of advertising at Syracuse University's SI Newhouse School of Public Communications. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. If you're in Rochester, you can call 263-9994. Or you can tweet us. I'm at MMACMedia on Twitter. So turning back to our conversation about the digital realm, this was the first year that CBS allowed national advertisers to purchase a spot and have their ad appear in real time during its digital stream on desktops and tablets through the CBS Sports app. Any feedback about how that went? Was that an effective strategy? I turned to Tina, our
ironically, I did not watch the live stream. I was watching it, you know, traditional way, but I did more of the checking on the digital channels, you know, YouTube and Facebook, and what the advertisers were doing there. So I'm not sure about the live stream, but I would imagine I see the stats that live streaming is becoming just more and more a popular place to watch. So I would think that is going to be a critical part of the offering for advertisers to be willing to put that money out.
I think it's inevitable that we're headed that way. The NFL did one game this year. I think the Buffalo Bills were playing where you could only watch it through a live stream, and so the NFL is already starting to kind of dip their toe into that and experiment with that. And I think it won't be too long where they you have the option to watch most of the games that way.
Yeah, let's turn to Twitter. So Esurance did something pretty interesting this year. They had a sweepstakes, and they used a hashtag, which was eSure and sweepstakes. And that hashtag was seen more than any other combination of words on Twitter conversations on Super Bowl Sunday, except for, I think, hashtag SB50. Mm-hmm. But it had 1.5 billion impressions. And it raises the question, at least to me, are sweepstakes effective? Do you get new customers from sweepstakes? Or are these just people looking for money?
Yeah, I can't speak to the effectiveness of it, but what I can say, I believe, is that just because that hashtag was trending does not mean for by any stretch of the imagination that anybody was paying attention to it other than to try to win. You know, that's why it got so many impressions. It was a retweet to win. So I wouldn't say it was an effective hashtag where people were actually talking about the brand.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree.
I did not enter.
Oh. That says something. Tina, what were you tracking at Roberts during the Super Bowl?
During the Super Bowl, it was just kind of watching the ads and seeing what was happening, but also watching the trending topics. And we looked at the trending topics for the U.S. and then for the cities to see where there were some differences. Let's see what we came up with. The one thing is that puppy monkey baby was one thing that trended across all the regions for the whole game. And then other than that, let me pull my little sheet up. I'm sure I'm making really loud paper shuffling noises as I go. But the trends did differ, and a lot of the advertisers didn't make the trends, you know. And a lot of that could be the official hashtag didn't catch on, or they didn't show it, and or people just say different things that didn't get combined into one, you know, solid amount of trending keywords. So,
mm-hmm. Kevin, any thoughts on the Twitter aspect as it compares to broadcast media with ads?
Well, I mean, as a person who spent many years working what's now known as the traditional sort of legacy side of the business, it's fascinating to me how the center of gravity in the business has shifted. You know, some years ago, of course, the Super Bowl was sort of the industry's center of gravity. You know, it was the biggest audience, the biggest stage. And now we live in a world now where a kid with a laptop in Mumbai, India, you know, can post something for a brand that would completely hijack the event. And that includes Twitter, of course. But that dynamic fascinates me.
Any thoughts about Snapchat? There was a Gatorade Snapchat ad, if you can call it that, that ran on Super Bowl Sunday featuring tennis star Serena Williams, and she was getting virtually dunked with Gatorade. There were 100 million views by midday Monday, and that's pretty close to the actual number of people who watched the Super Bowl. Thoughts on Snapchat? I'm seeing shaking
of
heads.
You're looking at I haven't jumped in on that yet, and I don't know if I ever will, you know, being a Gen Xer. But if I look around our agency at Dixon Schwabel, there's probably half the agency of millennials, and they're all on it, and they're all going back and forth with it. I think it's an important, the most growing space right now where we're advertisers and brands are either going or considering going based on what you read in, you know, on Ad Week or Ad Age, for sure.
Yeah. Snapchat, I mean, I'm definitely a Gen Xer too, and I get on there and I just don't always get it, though I love the filters. But, you know, Snapchat is evolving their advertising model, you know, on a regular basis, which is good because when we looked at it a little bit closer last year, it was still really for the brands with huge marketing budgets, but it's starting to evolve and there's more that they can do now. And I think the more they open it up, I think Snapchat will become a critical channel.
I think it's that visual thing. That's why Instagram does
right.
So well, because people are so visual and you can get your message across so quickly.
Right. Mm-hmm. Is an ad justified, an investment in an ad justified without the digital component? Is it okay just to pay for that 30-second spot on broadcast TV and hope for the best? Or does it not make sense in today's world? Do you need that extra digital component?
I don't know so much. Sorry, I'm going to jump in. I don't know so much that you need it, but it would be insane not to do it. It's so easy. I mean, once you have the content created, you just have to put it out there on digital. I can't see a major advertiser not having a YouTube channel at the very least and or a Facebook page to upload video to. And You miss out. I mean, in looking at the numbers, you know, millions and millions of views on YouTube and Facebook, and that would be a huge misstep.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
As would I, yeah.
If you don't put it out there, somebody's going to put it out there for you and control the message anyway. So at least you can control a little bit of it by engaging that way.
Exactly. And we're seeing a lot of clients ask for not only a 30-second spot now, but a 15-second pre-roll spot that they could run online, sometimes a 60-second version for their website. So everyone's multi-purposing their creative messages.
There were quite a few teasers, I think, that ran online, apartments.com, maybe Amazon. There were quite a few. Is that becoming a mainstay? Is that the next? Will that happen with all the ads in the next few years?
I think they'll probably put more of the full ads, because when you just look at the numbers and the number of views they end up with, you know, publishing the ad online, the full ad online ahead of time, definitely you end up with more views overall, you know, unless it's a really runaway ad.
There was a brand last year, I wish I could remember the brand, but they basically held the Super Bowl spot hostage, saying that, well, you have to watch this teaser, and if 10 million people watch it, it unlocks the real spot before the Super Bowl. And it got unlocked. I can't remember. I wish I could remember what brand it was, and maybe it's not so great because I can't remember that. But that's an interesting way of getting involved.
Yeah. Participatory advertising. Caleb on Twitter says, my favorite ads will always be the Southwest Airlines Wanna Get Away concept. And Val, our engineer, loved the Pokemon ad. thumbs up for Val in the booth. So those were favorite ads, those were winners. What about failures? What ads did you see that you thought, ooh, this was a bad decision?
Some of the ones I don't remember very well. I think Butterfinger was not very exciting, and I expected it to be. And WeatherTech just was kind of dry.
Made in USA.
It was very patriotic WeatherTech.
I like that.
I thought it was good, but I feel like it needed a little bit more of that special sauce. It tried for that, but I didn't feel like it really reached it.
Can you?
It didn't make me cry. It should have made me cry.
It should make you cry.
Well,
yes.
I was a little disappointed because after seeing that whole spot and how it's made in America and the pride in America made and what it's going to do for families.
Can you walk our listeners through that just in case they haven't seen it?
I'm not that familiar, but I just think it was vignettes of people, American workers and things like that, factory workers and families. And then it was talking about American values and hard work and craftsmanship or whatever. And then at the end, it was for floor mats, and I was sort of disappointed.
You know, it's funny. We did that survey the next day in the agency at Dixon Schwab where people voted whether it was a touchdown or fumble, and we showed that spot. And I expected it to be a fumble, and the majority of the room said that it was a touchdown. And I think that was that American message that resonated through that, where if they would have taken more of a product benefit of saying we're laser measured, which is another thing I think they say, that probably wouldn't have connected as strongly to people.
Yeah, I definitely think the concept was right. You know, I guess for me, it just didn't quite hit as emotionally as I would hope that concept would.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. I typically resist requests to identify the worst of something because it's just unkind. Okay, but I do need to point out. I thought the shock top spot was a really missed opportunity. I don't know if you
I'm
all
not
remember
familiar. Can you
spot.
Describe that just in case our listeners haven't seen it?
It was. It's difficult to describe. It's just. It sort of positioned itself as the insult beer. You know, it's just got the worst possible personality.
It was T.J. Miller, who is from Silicon Valley and other shows and voiceovers talking to the little knob on the beer handle, a little orange slice, and I think the cuts that they have had of that commercial online outside of the one that aired were pretty funny. But the one that aired, just didn't seem to capture all the really great moments.
Oh yeah, I didn't see those outtakes.
And what was even funnier is the next day they did a 5-minute clip of the actual TJ and the beer pouring handle critiquing all of the spots they ran during the Super Bowl. And if you Google that, that's actually funny.
Have any of you heard of Paracel ProClean, that new laundry detergent, new product out there? They aired their first ad during the Super Bowl. No one seems to remember it. And it featured kind of a spokesman coming in, and the lights come up on stage. And he says, there's been a consumer testing publication
which tested all of the top laundry detergents, and hey, ours won, and that was the commercial, and no one remembers it.
Wow.
So, I mean, when we talk about failures or worst, I mean, it's a very subjective term, of course, but for someone not to remember, and for it to be your first attempt at having your brand nationally recognized and you kind of air what may be considered a flop, it's, I'm sure they're disappointed back in
I can imagine.
Offices.
Yeah, I think they were going for that less is more strategy. It doesn't sound like it
quite
really
a bit
worked.
Less.
What about the Marmot ad? Any thoughts on that one, the little rodent?
That was terrible.
That was cute.
I didn't care for it personally.
Okay. Why was it terrible, Kevin?
Well, it's just so depraved. It kind of falls under the heading of what I described as a random act of creativity. You know, it's got nothing to do with anything. It's got nothing to do with the brand. It's got nothing to do with why I might want the brand. And, you know, the suggestion that the guy's going to have a relationship with this rodent, you know,
yeah,
an appalling idea.
For anyone who hasn't seen that, it's an ad about a man just enjoying the outdoors with his pet rodent. And there's
Marmot,
right. And there's a song playing in the background about friends, and it's just bizarre. And the tagline at the end is fall in love with the outside, but it's right before the Marmot and the man kiss. So
I think they missed a huge opportunity. I thought the soundtrack should have been Muskrat Love.
Oh, my God.
That would have worked great.
What are some classic techniques in advertising that you think are still effective? We have this new push toward digital and social media, but what are some true mainstays that will never, ever die that you can count on?
The quality of a great, simple idea is got to be priority number one, no matter what you're doing and what channel you're trying to push it through. If you complicate it, it quickly starts to lose people's focus.
I think tapping into emotion is huge. Either make it touching and heartwarming or funny or honest. You have to touch something in someone I think that will never go out of style.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that. And that's where, you know, the advertising world and the social media world really agree. You know, the content that does really well on social does that. Most of it is humorous. You know, everybody loves a cat video, but and which is one of the ads I really remember before it was even, oh, we got to watch the ads, was the cat herding video. And I couldn't remember who it was for, and I looked it up yesterday, and I think it was EDS. I still don't even remember, but just the image of all those cats, and it was hilarious, and the cowboys. But you know, I think that the, you know, emotion and it, whether it be awe, joy, even sadness, but mainly humor, is really what resonates with people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the other thing that was nice to see in this Super Bowl is that there are a handful of architectures to advertising that have worked since advertising was invented, okay? And they include problem solution, they include product demos, et cetera. And you look at this Super Bowl, there were just so many spots that have precisely that architecture. And of course, the major among them was a spot we haven't talked about, which I liked a lot, which was the Honda truck spot with the sheep singing in the field.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is just a fabulous product demonstration, you know, of a real reason to buy the truck. I did think it would have been funnier if they'd made the song "It Had to Be You."
But you're right, that was a great product demonstration, and I could just see them looking at the brief and saying, okay, we have to make people aware that we have speakers in our bed.
Yes.
And how the creative team ended up with that is remarkable, and I applaud them for that execution.
I can also hear that you need $2 million for singing sheep.
Yeah.
Another spot that didn't run in the Super Bowl that I always love because I think it's so perfect is Jake from State Farm.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I could see the brief saying, okay, we have to make people aware that State Farm has representatives available 24/7. And I think that was a brilliant execution that I could see that. I could watch that spot over and over, and I never get tired of it.
I just saw that in the last week, so that's been running a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I love the Coneheads version.
Yeah,
of that
I remember
too.
That. Yeah.
That's awesome.
You know. Before we close, we talked a few minutes ago about the PSAs.
Mm-hmm.
I need to testify that you remember the spot about not wasting water.
Yes, Colgate.
I haven't left the water running while I shave since I saw that commercial. I mean, it's amazing. And when I saw it on the Super Bowl, I thought, Jesus, what a crummy... I thought that was sort of a missed opportunity. But the truth is, I have not left the water running while I shave in the morning since I saw it.
I thought it was a little odd, though, that they showed somebody who looked like they were from either Africa or Asia, and implying that, you know, turning off your sink here in America might really impact those people. Where, you know, maybe it was should have been somebody in California trying to wash their car.
And from at the AMA event where Tom Peretti talked, he had some stats in terms of he knew somebody in the water industry, and the usage of water had gone down, right? Do you remember him?
Yeah,
absolutely. Some percentage, which was impressive. So it definitely had an impact.
We've
got about a minute left, so I want to ask one more quick question for each of you individually. What's your favorite Super Bowl ad of all time? Any year, any time. Favorite ad. Mark, kick us off.
Bud.
Wise.
Okay. Loud and clear.
Didn't Nike do that end of the Y2K spot one time? Was that a Super Bowl spot? Well, Nike always does great stuff.
Is that your pick?
Yeah.
Nike?
I think it's a
Y2K?
Perhaps.
Okay.
I liked the Volkswagen ad with the little boy, but I had somebody tweet me that their favorite ad was the Apple ad in
1984.
Was pretty epic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kevin?
Well, actually, this is really painful for me to admit, but because I was working on IBM at the time in 1984. But clearly, I think 1984 from Apple, which redefined what a Super Bowl commercial could be.
Mm-hmm. I wish we had more time to talk about that, but we're out of time in this hour. If you want to watch this year's Super Bowl ads, I'll post a link to all of those commercials on the podcast page for the show in a couple hours. I'd like to thank my guests, Mark Stone, Tina Clark, Kent Joshby, and Kevin O'Neill. Valerie LaBanca is the engineer of this program, and Marielle Brinkerhoff is our intern today. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Member Supported Public Radio.